Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be learning together Divrei Hayamim Beis Perek Tes Zayin, 16th chapter of the second book of Divrei Hayamim. This is the perek which ends the rule of Asa, the king in the south, and it is a tragic perek in many ways. It is 14 sukkim long, and the parallel parsha can be found in Melachim Aleph Perek Tes Zayin. This is the end of this era. Unfortunately, it's a very sad story because we hear now about, in the first six psukim, the war with Baasha in the north. The king in the north is Baasha. Asa is the great grandson of Shlomo Melech. He is in the south. And we hear in the 36th year of Asa's rule, so he was a very long lived king, there was this war where Baasha, who's the king in the north, Baasha was the one who massacred the family of Yerovam and took the throne. So he ultimately comes along and builds Ramah, which is this Esa Ramah, which sounds like some sort of tower, not to allow those entering or leaving the kingdom of Asa. So what does Asa do in response? He gathers all the money and the gold, the silver in the coffers of the king, and he sends them with a servant to Ben-Hadad. Ben-Hadad is the king of Aram. Aram is the kingdom to be found in the area of Syria today, to Damascus. And he goes and he says the following: "Bris beni uvenecho benovi benovicho. We have an intergenerational covenant with my side of the family, and I'm giving this to you, this money, as a bribe to attack Israel, to attack Baasha, so that he should desist from attacking me." Hadad very gladly availed himself to this opportunity. He took the money and he went and he attacked the northern areas of Israel, attacking and capturing Eon, Dan, Avel, and Miskenois, Arei, and Naphtali. So this is the northern reaches. This is the area of the Golan Heights to the westerly side, which is being taken over here by the kingdom of Aram. When Baasha hears about this, he himself pulls back and stops building the Ramah, and Asa takes the supplies used for this building. He takes all the stones and the sticks, the wood that he was using, and he uses it to strengthen the cities of Geva and Mitzpah, which are on the border. So, just a few questions before we go on. What is Baasha building? What is Vayiven Es HaRamah, this Ramah, this tower, this hill? What is he doing? So, Mitzvah says this is a battle tower, this is an offense, meaning he's setting up an offensive so that he should have the high ground to be able to sling stones and shoot arrows into the areas of Yerushalayim. So this is seen as an offense. This is an act of war in the books of Asa. The Malbim says that, in fact, it's not so much of an offense, but rather a defense. What's been happening is that Baasha sees that all his people are hemorrhaging down to the south. There are so many immigrants going from the kingdom of Israel to Yehuda that he wants to stop them going south. So he sets up this almost as a checkpoint to be able to stop them even further. And this Asa, therefore, is... Asa's actions are seen more as an offense to Baasha's defense rather than the other way around. How could he betray the other Israelites? How could Asa actually betray the Israelites to the northern kingdom? So the Malbim says this betrayal had already happened. In fact, Baasha, the kingdom of the north, the Israel kingdom, had already forged an alliance with Ben-Hadad from Aram, and Ben-Hadad was supposed to help out with the war against the Bnei Yehuda in the south. And what therefore Asa is doing is Asa is in defense requesting to break the covenant, break the alliance with this bribe, with all this money, with the kingdom of Israel, and in fact align himself with the kingdom of Yehuda. That's what's happening. So he's actually the second one involved over here. The first one to use, we'll call it a foreign power against a brother, has been Baasha. What Asa is doing is he's realigning that kingdom. That's what's happening over here. Now we hear about what the aftermath of this. So in Pesukim Zion to Yud, we hear about the Hanani Haro'eh. Hanani comes in, he's some sort of seer, and he comes to Asa and he gives him a very strong rebuke. He says, because you relied on the king of Aram and you didn't rely on Hashem, so therefore you're going to be ultimately refugees from the kingdom of Aram yourself. And he points out that when the Ethiopians attacked you and they had a vastly larger army than the Israelites, you trusted Hashem. Hashem gave them in your hand. Why did you not trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu now when it was Israelites against you? And Asa, when he hears this rebuke from Hanan, he gets very upset. Vayichas Asa el haro'eh, and he places him in beis hamapeches. He places him in a beis hamapeches, which the Meforshim understand to mean is a prison, because he spoke to him in such anger. And this is a big changing, a big turning point, as we see at this point in time. And in fact, it says that he inflicted cruelties on some of the people at this time. So he started persecuting those who he felt were dissidents. This is a shocking moment, because you have a person not looking inwards to some self-reflection, but rather blaming on the outside. How could he grow so angry with the prophet of Hashem? How did this ever happen? This is Asa, the king who's seen as such a righteous king. So the Ralbag says is because, in fact, he was too brash. The way he said it was not the right way. Prophets speak to king and give kings and give them rebuke all the time. That's the all of Sefer and Shmuel and Melachim. But this was just very harsh. This is too much. And that's why he wasn't angry so much about the message as about the way it was given over it. It insulted him. Whereas the Malbim says, no, he wasn't actually a prophet. He was a ro'eh, meaning to say he was a sage. He was a very, very inspired individual, but he wasn't a prophet. And therefore, he was giving his take on the situation to Asa, and Asa felt this was inappropriate. If it's a prophet, then he would listen, as the Malbim suggested as well. Just by the way, looking at the word ma'apeches, the Beis HaMa'apeches, the Mesudas points out that if you read the word backwards, it's kippah, which means to say a jail. And the Da'at Mikra points out that it is actually wiser ma'apeches. Ma'apeches also means to turn something. So it's an area which is too small for the person to be in, so they have to crouch into it, and they're left in confinement in that small area, which ultimately essentially crushes the person because they don't have the ability to flex their limbs. So it's a very cruel type of imprisonment that this person was put into. And now we hear about the end of the life of Asa. We hear from Sukkim Yud Aleph to Yud Dalet that, in fact, that the rest of the matters, as Ezra usually points out, you can find our Sefer Melachim Li Yud of Yisrael. You can find out the rest of the annals in these other Svarim that Ezra obviously had access to. And at the end of his years, in his 39th year as king, he got a sickness in his feet. He was diseased in his feet, and he didn't search out Hashem, but rather the doctors. And we hear about how that he dies in the 41st year, so it's a very long reign. And he's buried in Ir David in a grave which he seems to have dug already in his life. And he has this whole, setup of besamim, which are burnt. There's a beautiful smelling. Why does this? A fascinating question. But one of the things just to focus on this is, what's the significance on him getting his sickness in his legs? So there's a lot to think about over here. The Psukim explain that this was a gam. This was also, meaning to say, the way the Pesukim you describe it is, v'gam b'chol yo, and even in his sickness, lo darash es Hashem ki barofim, rather in the doctors, which means this is the microcosm of the way he started looking at life. He looked not to Hashem, but to ways that he could solve it himself, that he could control, whether it be the war with Baasha and finding Ben-Hadad, that's the macrocosm, or the microcosm in his sickness, turning to doctors, as opposed to saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu might be sending him some sort of sign. In the 2016 Brussels conference at the European Parliament, Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, gave a speech about the virus, what he called the mutating virus of anti-Semitism. And he pointed out that any society which is suffering from anti-Semitism is in fact a society which is red flagged for trouble itself, not just with the Jews. And he explained because the following is true. This is a quote. When bad things happen to a group, its members can ask one of two questions. What did we do wrong? Or who did this to us? The entire fate of the group will depend on which it chooses. If it asks, what did we do wrong, it has begun the self-criticism essential to a free society. If it asks, who did this to us, it has defined itself as a victim. It will then seek a scapegoat to blame for all its problems. Classically, that has been the Jews. So Rabbi Sacks was saying is that when you blame a small subsection of society, that is ultimately a sign that you're not in a very good and healthy state. The same is true of human beings. When we blame when we're hurt, that is means to say we're not looking inwards to fix what we possibly can fix. The Ralbag points out that the legs over here are a metaphor for the way he sees his independence. He believed he was independent. I can get allies from the north. I'll give them money. They'll support me. Well, that is a feigned independence. Well, now your independence, you think you can walk around. Well, I'll take away, says Hashem, what you can walk around on. But he still wasn't willing. He was not lo darash es Hashem even in this as well. Just to look at this on a bigger scale, we spent a bit of time on us in the last three prakim. Rav Yigal Ariel points out that if you look back in Perek Yudalad, in one of those beautiful speeches where he gave before the war with Zerach HaKushi, with the Ethiopians, he said the following words, Hashem, einim chol azor bin bein rav ve'elein koach. Hashem, you can help whether it's a lot or it's weak people. Azreinu Hashem Elokeinu ki alecho nishanu v'shimcho bonu al ha'mon azen. We're going with your name against this multitude. If you notice, actually, he's actually quoting two prior speeches in Tanakh. One is Yonatan, when he is fighting in Sefer Shmuel Aleph Perek Yudalad, as he's about to attack with his arms bearer, thousands of the troops of the Plishtim, only two men, he says the same words over Yaakov Baruch Hu, Ein Ma'atzor Lo Yishia Barav O Bimat. And he's also quoting David HaMelech in Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Zayin, where David HaMelech talks to Goliath, and he says to Goliath, I come in the name of God. That's why I'm fighting you. You come with the spear, I come with the name of God. Fusing together the speech of Yonatan, the son of Shaul, from the house of the north of Binyamin, and the children of Rachel, and David HaMelech. There's this opportunity, he's forging together the two Batei Yisrael. However, as the Seder Olam Rabbah points out, and all the Meforshim quote at the beginning of this Perek, Seder Olam Rabbah Perek Tezvav, is that there could have been a moment, there could have been the convergence of the north and the south together right here. It could have been the moment where Asa was bringing together those refugees from the north, he could have united the kingdom, and in fact the numbers play it out. Shlomo HaMelech married the daughter of Paroi at the year 4 of his kingdom, therefore 36 years of his were seen as, to a certain degree, condemned, even though he built the Beis HaMikdash during those years. So therefore, there's a punishment for 36 years. Those 36 years ended square and center in the reign of Asa, which means to say Asa could have reunited after those 36 years of purging, but it didn't. This was the moment that it could have been, but ultimately, when he made this mistake and he looked outward rather than inward, this is ultimately where that opportunity ended. And just to add one last point, if you go to the end of Yirmiyahu, Perek Mem Aleph, Pasuk Tes, there's a description over there when Yishmael murders Gedaliah, who's the last governor that the Babylonians put into place. What happens is, as he leaves the palace, there's a whole group of people coming from Israel, from the northern kingdom, the remnant Jews from the north, who are coming to come to the Beis HaMikdash. They thought that they were going to bring a mincha to the Beis HaMikdash. They just found out that it had been destroyed. It had already been a few months now. It's around Rosh Hashanah time. It was Av when it was destroyed. They're coming down, and he sees them, and he massacres all of them. He massacres this whole group. And where does he put them? It says that he put them into a pit. He threw all these corpses into a pit. What pit? It says Asher Asa Asher Asa HaMelech Asa Bibnei Baash HaMelech Yisrael or Asa Milei Yishmael Ben Nesaniyahu Chalalim. He places them in the trench made by Asa in the war against Baasha. This is our chapter. That's where he put the murdered people from the north who are coming to pay homage to the Beis HaMikdash, who had been destroyed from trying to unite. And the Malbim points out over there that this is continuing the same hairline fracture. This was the moment that the two kingdoms could have come back together. Hashem was giving it a time out. They could have had the opportunity, and unfortunately that was not to be, and that therefore widened to a point that even at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there was going to be more bloodshed, unfortunately, because of this moment. So it's rather a heavy moment, although at the same time realizing that Asa did achieve a huge amount of goodness in his life at the same time. In the meantime, wonderful and meaningful day.